Blog Talk Radio. You are listening to Sunday Interfaith Services on Greater Good Ministries Radio. Each week we bring you messages of love, light, and inspiration from different ministers working in service with the Creator of all life. First Sunday is Dr. Gregory Scott with Conversations Beyond the Edge at 10 a.m. Central. Second Sunday is the Empowerment Hour with Reverend B at noon Central. Third Sunday is the Light Givers International Association service and Worldwide Source and Nation Celebration at 10 a.m. Central. The fourth Sunday is In His Presence with evangelist Patricia Benjamin at 9 a.m. Central. Join us every Sunday. We welcome you with an open heart and an open mind.
Okay, good morning. This is Phyllis and Ron Brown. We are in South Florida. We welcome you to this program. We have our phone number for call-in is 347-237-5339. And our website is www.lightgivers, with an S after lightgiver.org. The first Sunday of each month at 11 a.m. with Greg Scott is Conversations from the Edge. The third Sunday of each month at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time is Lessons from the Light Givers, which is followed by World Source of Nation Ceremony today. Every Thursday of each month at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, the Light Giver Universal Healer Hour is available as well. I'd like you to notice when you sign up on this site, www.lightgivers.org, you will receive a newsletter. You will automatically receive the Golden Age Light Giver messages. For donations, Light Giver message number 1, 2, and 3 are available on this particular website. Number 1 is labeled True Wisdom. 2 is letters from 6 ascended masters who are Trimulan, Rebazar Tars, Gopal Das, St. Francis of Assisi, Kedmon, Yabal Sakabi. Number 3 is letters to an ascension master, aspirants. Donations are requested at $15 each. The book written by Greg Scott is Universal Healer, God, Energy, and Action. For a donation, all of these are available on the website www.lightgivers.org. Okay.
Okay, we're going to start off with the this particular Thursday. I really got. Now this is Sunday. the Golden Light Giver Message 12, and what I'm going to do is we're going to start off by reading a paragraph, and then we're going to open up the phones and see what comments you might have about this first paragraph, because this one, this Golden Age Light Giver Message 12 has got a lot of information in it, and it deals on some subjects that I kind of like to, especially karma. It goes into karma quite a bit, and it's got some quite different viewpoints about karma. And it's probably going to surprise a lot of people. So I'm going to start off with the first paragraph here. It says, how does the ascended person fit into daily life? This is a question that is fundamental to understanding the true essence of ascension. There are many that assume that with the ascended consciousness, one should distance himself in the name of detachment from daily life. Oh no, the truly ascended person can plunge directly into all matter of affairs and activities on a regular and daily basis. Who better exemplifies the nature of the ascended individual than Rumi, the famed Sufi master and poet? He taught at more than one university, consumed great volumes of wine, and probably never turned down a good argument or fight. Yet he lived a life of mystery, passion, and adventure, completely immersed in all the aspects of living. Who better to be involved directly in all of life's adventures than one who knows life is truly an illusion and not the ultimate reality? The truly ascended person is able to penetrate more quickly to that which is true and good, and which is able to uplift the individual consciousness from the muck and mire of daily life. Okay, I think we can open up the phones now, if you would, and see if we can get some comments going here. I know that instead of being a hermit, it's much better to get out there and mingle and get the message across to people. And I'd like to hear what some other people might have to say about this.
Hey, Ron, this is Ernest.
Hey, Ernest.
How y'all doing?
We're doing good.
I like this paragraph. It shows that, like you said, you're not supposed to be a hermit. You can get out and talk to people and just be yourself, and the consciousness automatically will touch others, the way I see it.
Yeah. Well, I think in most of the United States, not all the United States, but we are active, we're doers, we get things done. We do have monasteries here in the United States where people are live more of a secluded, quiet life, which is good for whatever reason they want to do that. I'm not one of those who can do that. But I feel like we do need to be involved in life's adventures. And it does, when I first saw that and realized this person was highly involved, and that they were living life to the fullest, but yet they were very aware, I got my eyes opened up. I was really pleased to see that. So,
and I think both of us are quite willing to do a lot of different things to get involved. but that's the way you learn, I believe, is by getting in there and doing it. And that's the kind of life path we have selected to do, and get involved and actually experience all this stuff. And I think that's a better way for us anyway to do it.
Okay, I'm going to go on to the next paragraph. What must be the focus of the ascended individual? The ascended individual has a solitary focus, and that is on two twin themes of Source and his continued or her continued transformation into the essence of it. All other foci, albeit important, are ephemeral and of passing interest. There is permanence to the focus upon Source, and that is more than simply being transcendent. The very notion of transcendence acknowledges a relationship between a presumed experience that is greater or more than something else. The truth of the matter is that with a focus on Source, one comes to realize that there truly is nothing else other than Source. To experience Source is not merely transcendent, it is transformational, and that one becomes more aware of what he or she is, not what he or she was and what he or she will be, but what he or she is, and that is that he or she is composed of the same material, as it were, that God is, and that life or lives he or she has been given have been for the singular purpose of his coming to that realization. So the continued transformation is, in fact, continued realizing of one's personal divinity. With that realization, things thought to be significant not only pale in comparison, they disappear. Things of importance, although given necessary attention, neither stymie nor capture the permanent attention of the ascended individual that is in this world, but not of it. Any comments?
Phyllis, this is Vivian. And
yeah.
The one thing that I really like about this is that, yes, we are divinity. We are this spark of God. And I think everything in our teaching in our world diminishes that. I mean, yeah, some people have religion, but even in religion, you know, you're put down, you know, you're evil or sinful, not evil, but sinful. And I think that's really, really important to realize that, yes, not only may we have this relationship with Source, but that we are part of it. And the thing that is secondary in importance to me is that if that's true for me, then that is true for everyone. And everything that's alive has some of the Source energy in it. And that, I think, has been the most transformational thing for me in many ways, that when I'm looking at the TV and I want to yell at it, you know, I have to step back and I have to say, these people have chosen their life path. They, as well as I, are part of Source, and they're playing out their role for, you know, what's going to transpire in the world. So I think it's really important for me to know I am part of Source, but I think the second part is that everybody else is too. Saves me a little, you know, craziness in my own mind about other things that are going on in the world.
Yeah. Ron?
You know, it mentions Source in here, and I've did a lot of study and all my life on this kind of thing, and rarely was it ever mentioned about Source. It was always God realization or was the ultimate goal and this, that, and the other. But now we're beginning to find out that there's even more yet to come. So, and I like the idea that God, being a spark of God, is like God breaks off a small piece of itself to create us. And therefore, if that is true, and I kind of believe that is, you, me, all of us are God. And, you know, because it's like a hologram. If you break off a piece of it, that piece contains the total sum of all of it. And I think that's what we are. We are, you know, we're like God, we just maybe don't realize it yet or haven't had the experience to realize who we are and truly what we possess. And so that's another thing. We just got to kind of wake up to the fact that we are just like God in a way, just a piece of it, not the totality.
Into the poem.
Okay, if there's no more comments, I will go into the next little paragraph here. And how does soul fit into ascension? There are two ways to consider soul. The first way is to define it. The second way is to experience it. When defined, soul is described as a unit of awareness, a spark of God. An even larger question is, what is the purpose of soul? Why does it exist? Soul's existence is an aspect of the limitless unitary existence of the dynamics of the Creator God. Just as breath, oxygen, molecules, and atoms are essential components of the reality of human life, so is soul an essential component of the existence of the Creator Gods. Divine law requires of the existence of the Creator God that it recompose the bulk of itself into units of its own awareness and undertake a journey of creation and recreation. It is a perpetual and universal experience that the Creator God has. One might say that it is eternal, but in fact, eternity is only an aspect of the Creator God. Thus, the experience is truly outside of eternity, a concept which you humans are ill-equipped to grasp. And this paragraph got into a little what I was saying earlier, that being a little part of God, you are a miniature God in existence, really, and it takes, and it says here, to recompose the bulk of itself into units of its own awareness. And that way, it sends us out to gather the information and report back, you know, what we've learned. So God is in a perpetual state of learning as we are. So I think that's kind of unique. Any other comments?
I like the sense where it says one might say that it is eternal, but in fact, eternity is only an aspect of the Creator God.
Yeah.
To me, that means that there's much more to consciousness, to the Creator, that we are aware of. It's exciting to know that there's a lot more to come if you continue to focus on source.
And I think, too, that in that last sentence it says that eternity is a concept that humans are ill-equipped to grasp. It is kind of hard to think of eternity because we always think in a linear fashion. We always think of a beginning and an ending. And we always think, you know, in physical human terms. And when you get outside of that, the brain just doesn't know how to function. It just cannot. It cannot even think of eternity. It does not have a category to put it into. So it has a hard time trying to break it down.
Yeah, because it's just outside of the realm of the mind.
That's right.
Yeah.
The end is kind of, you know, you can grasp that, but the no beginning, I think that's what the mind has issues with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just time in and of itself is just a wild subject, you know. It's very fluid and it's not set. Time is it's not the same in all aspects, so... you can really think about time in a lot of different ways, so it's quite a subject within itself.
Oh yeah, that can go on for days.
Hi guys, Lynn in Minnesota. And
hi.
What a fun conversation. One of my favorite topics, probably because I think in the last 2 years I've spent more time becoming aware of some of these issues than I ever have before. But I love the last line here where it says, to say the process is infinite and timeless completely understates its totality.
Yeah.
And I emphasize that word completely. And some of the frames of reference I've been able to use that help me make sense to this is considering dimensionality. Barbara Hand Clow wrote a wonderful book about the nine dimensions of life, and I liked it because I was able to put things into some kind of a construct order in my mind to connect with how things work. And I think particularly in the last few months, I've been much more aware of when I'm focused in third dimensionality and when I'm moving more into soul dimension or fifth dimensionality. Well, I wouldn't necessarily call that soul, I guess, but fifth dimensional says it. It's like the difference is being third dimensional means that everything has opposites. You know, there up has down, good has bad, light has darkness, and so forth. And in fifth dimensionality, all is oneness.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge leap.
It is.
And it's a huge leap, particularly because right now we're making that leap. And we can see and experience on a daily basis ourselves shifting into this new awareness of timelessness and beingness. And there's a part of that where we're actually moving into, actually we are already, but we're becoming aware of telepathy and other forms of communication that we haven't really considered. And all of a sudden we find that we know things that we didn't know before, and that they're coming in through some of these other measures. And I think that kind of put that in the context of that last line, the process is infinite, timeless, and completely understates the totality. The farther I get along in this, the understates the totality becomes understated. I mean, it's just so much bigger than we are, and we're at a really exciting point.
Yeah,
I'll say more when we get to karma.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned a book, Nine Dimensions of What?
I can't remember the title exactly. The author is Barbara Hand Clow, C-L-O-W. She's done a lot of writing. She does a lot of work with the Pleiadians, and she is a trained shaman, Cherokee medicine woman. Her grandfather taught her from the time she was a little girl. And so she's had that background, and she's worked with some of her children with that same kind of process. But she just has a whole different view, particularly coming out of the Native American focus, where, you know, a lot of that memory of how things worked has been carried through time into the present through these peoples for which we all owe them a huge debt of gratitude. And I do recommend her reading her stuff, because she's great. And she's got a website if you go to Barbara Hand Clow.
Okay.
.com, you can find it on the internet.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
And speaking about all this, you know, relating to spirit and everything, we went to Disney World down here the other day, and we had a lady with us, and she's real spiritual too. And when we got there, we said we were going to do everything positive and see, you know, have no matter what happened, we were going to look at it through spirit. And everything that happened to us, we were meeting people. Things were falling in place. I mean, it was incredible. And we were noticing every time that it happened, we were noticing it. That if you just keep your thoughts on spirit, these things just seemed to fall into place, and it was incredible. And the day before that, we was walking in a state park here, and on a little trail out in the woods, and we looked up, and there was this wild, beautiful male peacock right in the pathway. And you don't see those very often. And he just stood there and looked at us. And as we approached him, he walked ahead of us, and he would kind of go out in front of us a little way, and he would stop and turn around, and like he was waiting on us. And he would keep looking at us and telling us, come on, come on, you know. So, and this went over about 20 minutes, and finally, he got enough, and he left. But things, if you really put your attention on it for the good, it seems like it just opens up an avenue or a path for good things to come in, and especially when you recognize they're happening. It's really neat.
Right, and this is Vivian. That peacock probably needed the energy that was coming through you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like when you're saying that you're there or that you're in tune with spirit, and it starts to use you. And I think one of the ways, you know, whether it be people or anything or animals, they need and want that energy of love.
Yeah. I'm going to go to the next paragraph, but I'm not going to read all of it because it's kind of long, but I did circle some bits and pieces here. How does karma fit into ascension? Karma is an essential element of the unfoldment of humanity, and that is best understood from an energetic perspective. Most people think of karma in terms of getting back the results of either what you have done or what has been done to you. And then we have negative karma, you have good karma. The fact of the matter is that karma is strictly the result of mental activity and creation. It is a creation of circumstances of life that the mind extracts from its own understanding of situations and may or may not be based on specific incidents. I'm going to skip down. Realization that karma is a mental creation is a precursor or precondition of ascension. That realization brings a tectonic shift in the human's perception of him or herself, and that he becomes aware that he is no longer tied to a perpetual wheel of creation. Instead, he finds that he or she is embedded in a transformation of greater and even great awareness, realization, and beingness that we understand as ascension. What brings us, you and me, to this point is the acceptance of the energetic tides of life. An ocean tide simply ebbs and flows, something easily accepted. Now, the individuals unable to separate themselves from the flow of matter, energy, space, and time, are indeed eternally bound to the karma wheel and only free with the assistance of those who themselves are established outside the karmic cycle, such as angels, archangels, ascended masters, higher beings, and others so empowered, such as Mahantas, Mahatmas, Satgurus, and ascension masters. The simple fact is that all beings have specific points of reference or polarity points. These could be called orientation points. Most of the orientation points of humans polarize or magnetize individuals toward the wheel of karma, largely as a consequence of mental activity and personal acceptance of circumstance. Those with orientation points polarized outward to some manifestation of God or Source may be endowed with the capacity to shift one's awareness to the possibility of outward awareness. And this is done with Shakti paths, initiation, dikshas, illuminated writing, and so on. Thus, one's attention is focused outwardly, much as a prisoner might be on finding ways to escape. Once it is learned that others have gotten out in some way, Karma fits into ascension in the following manner. It does not. Once that point is realized, one is now prepared for ascension. Comments?
When you're living outside of karma, you are more, your awareness is more on the condition of beingness.
Yes. Yes.
Well, how many people, I know me too, sort of envision karma like a just great big wheel that like a gear running, that it was mechanical, it was, you know, it was impossible to get out of, it was more like a mechanical device that you had to adhere to. But here it points out that it's more of a mental or energetic thing. And that sort of puts a whole different slant on karma. Has anybody got anything they want to say about that?
I don't know. Is this my car?
Yes, it is on.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is Gregory. One of the challenges to dealing with written material is that sometimes it's kind of confining. And I was thinking, and of course, as always, you're right on the point there, sir, that it winds up sounding like being a great big ball, and we all are sort of trapped into it. And then reading the lesson there, the message, I said, boy, this thing is incomplete. It's incomplete. It's explaining karma, and what it allows us to see is that there are moments that we are absolutely karma-free. You know, like there's moments when the tide goes in and the tide goes out, and then there's a moment where it almost looks like there's no tide. And the part that's missing is the idea of how do you maintain being karma-free, which is the whole benefit of the Ascension Program. I think that whole section spends a lot of time making it real clear that the ebb and flow and the give and go and so forth of life happens, and people get trapped by that. And there are moments, you know, when you see a baby smile, or you look at the sunset, or perhaps you're having a very pleasant thought, a nice meditation. In that moment, you're temporarily karma-free. And then you get out and you're in a traffic jam, and somebody rear-ends you or somebody hollers at you, whammo, you know, you're back into the action. So the major benefit of the, you know, are you being chased by or following a peacock, as the case may be, but the major benefit of this work, of the perspective that you folks are helping to bring out, is the idea that one can become free of that and maintain that. And each of you has this endowment that can be shared with folks that reshifts their polarity, which is talked about in that chapter, reshifts the polarity on a permanent basis, so that after one goes through Source Ascension and decides to accept Soul Ascension and maybe even God Ascension, their polarity is shifted, so that by definition and by experience, you're outside of that karmic will. And kind of like you're saying, Ron, you're just taking a look at it every now and then. And maybe now and then, like a car, you may go in for a spin. But the rest of the time, you're pretty much outside of it. So that's my contribution. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I got something, too. What I thought about when I read this was that forgiveness must play a major portion in this being energy or mental like that self-forgiveness and forgiving of others would play a fairly major role in this particular part of karma.
That makes a lot of sense. You know, if there's such a thing as something gluing you to the wheel of karma, forgiveness is certainly the unglue, if there's such a word.
It gets it out of the mental realm, you know, and just takes care of it, seems like.
Yeah.
This is Lynn, and some of the things that really resonated for me with this conversation, that also kind of go along with some of the other things I've been learning, but it all fits together, where it says in here, karma is strictly a mental creation. I think that's a real key. When we're stuck in our minds and in our thinking, we're stuck in karma. We're making it up as we go along, is what I've been able to see. And what we're making up, I'm finding, is ego-controlled. That the thinking in the third-dimensional world is blatantly ego-controlled. We have been trained and entrained and redesigned to constantly flow everything back to how it affects me and put it into our own ego context. And to me, the really cool thing that's going on now is once I started seeing this as an ego response, I could get a much bigger, like, depth perception of where I was at and what was going on, and that what I've discovered, and a lot of this comes out of the training that I've had with Brilliance Work, but is that when we go into our ego mind, we are totally in duality, and we see ourselves as the center of the universe, and we have ourselves elevated to being the one who knows. And in fact, once we can distinguish that, and this for me, Ron, is where forgiveness comes in all the time, because there are the ego thoughts that make me big and powerful, and then there are the ego thoughts that put other people down so I can be big and powerful. I mean, you can go through this whole thinking trip that is built around keeping us caught in the snares of ego. As long as we do that, we'll never get out of the third dimension. As soon as we're able to recognize what that game is and become one with all that is, accept it all. My mantra lately has been let go. Let go of whatever it is that I'm thinking. If it's something I like and it's something that appeals to me, I need to let go and just watch and see what's really coming through. And I'm finding that that's another way of moving beyond karma, and also a way when we let go of all of that ego-based karma, then we can move into that fifth-dimensional state of oneness and being and knowing on a much more expanded level than we could otherwise.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm just going to go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to say something that... if I can remember what I was going to say here, that karma, I know a lot of people, when they come into this world, they have this guilt trip because it's so easy to put that on people, that you're evil, that you're this, you're that, and you can get caught up in that, and it's hard to release that mental thing. You want to hang on to it because you feel like you are personally responsible for your own downside and your own enemies, all this other stuff, you know, and you hang on to this stuff. You can't seem to let it go. And the forgiveness factor and all this other, you just let it go. And you step up to the plate and you just take your inheritance that's yours, you know, because you're a piece of God, and don't be afraid to step up there and take it and get rid of all this stuff. So,
correct.
Yeah.
I'm going to end this with, there's two paragraphs that I wanted to finish with. Why is realization essential for ascension? Realization has three components: recognition, reflection, and action. Recognition is a greater event than simply observation. It involves seeing and understanding personal significance. Personal significance is what it means to the observer. Reflection is concerned with understanding its overall significance, not just to the individual, but its implications in and for the greater scheme of things. And action refers to the way in which the individual manifests the ascended consciousness in interaction with his or her environment. By no means is it a passive state of existence. With that, this ends the first series of the Golden Age messages. We do hope that they have contributed to both the development of your understanding and your levels of spiritual awareness. Understanding here relates to your mental capacity to accept the truth of higher reality. Your spiritual awareness is directly related to your willingness to expand your capacity to experience the truths of higher reality. Ron, shall I go start this? I'm going to go into the Source of Nations ceremony. Ron and I, we switch back and forth. We live in the same house. We are legally married.
This week is a feminine view of Source of Nations.
And I don't know how many people are listening who are across the pond in Asia and Europe. We have in the United States, we have a logo that you'll see every once in a while from a paint company called Sherwin-Williams, in which they pour a can of paint over the earth, and it's dripping over the earth. So that I got the inspiration. I kept looking at that thing, and I had this inspiration, so I'm going to share it with you. Imagine in your mind's eye the globe, Earth, and a giant bucket turned upside down over Earth with either paint or pure positive auras flowing out of this bucket and covering completely all the continents: Africa, Asia, Australia, Europe, North America, South America, Central America. All of them are covered, top to bottom of Earth and bottom to top of Earth. Everything is covered. At this time, we ask for the removals of any and all beliefs. They enable inhibiting beliefs and any and all blockages to us and all the countries and of Earth. We ask for the removal of any and all agreements made by ourselves or others that have resulted in blockages to our bodies, to our countries, and Earth's physical health and spiritual evolution. We ask for the removal of all connections to others, not of light and love, that have resulted in blockages to us, to Earth, to other countries, physical health, and spiritual evolution. We ask for the removal of any and all beings not of light and love inside and outside Earth's aura that have resulted in blockages to our physical body, Earth's physical health and spiritual evolution, and all countries. We ask for the removal of all influences from the past that resulted in blockages to our world's population, our physical health and spiritual evolution in all countries. We ask to be forgiven by all those that we may have offended, you and me, country versus country, knowingly or unknowingly. We forgive all countries and its peoples who may have offended us, country versus country, person against person, knowingly or unknowingly. We forgive all. This planet is now surrounded by a shield of divine healing light. It is now calibrated to be impenetrable by all negative energies, forces, and beings. We thank you for participating today. And the mic is open for anyone who would like to add something. It's open. The mic is open.
Phyllis, I love the Source of Nation. It was very, very nice.
Thank you. Vivian, thank you for coming in and pitching for us, our hookup to the internet.
Yes, I'm glad that you called earlier. This worked out fine.
Our computer just don't want us to bring it up. Okay, folks, I guess that ends it.
Okay, we'll see you all next month.
All right.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
Yeah. Bye bye.
Go out and walk in this beautiful sun here.
Yeah. Thank you.